Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Dr. Majid Siddiqui from Elmwood Immediate Care, 2949 Elmwood Avenue in Kenmore. Now, here's your host, Dr. Siddiqui.
Good day, folks. The greeting, peace be upon you, is common to Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. In Hebrew, Shalom Aleichem, a Hebrew greeting that means peace be upon you, the language of Moses. In the language of Jesus, Aramaic, Shalom. And Assalamu Alaikum in Arabic, the Arabic language of Prophet Muhammad. All from the language of Abraham. All are Semites. As usual, I begin my every show by going back in the history of human civilization. Going back 1,446 years ago to the scriptures, what Quran says about depression. This scripture provides a compassionate framework for dealing with sadness and depression. The Quran reminds us that with every hardship comes a way out for the freedom from troubles towards ease. Reference Surah Ash-Shara, chapter 94, verse 6. Holding on to the God's promise can give us the strength to keep moving forward, even when things seem bleak. The Quran describes adversities as test from God, and that God can free people from buildup of psychological stresses in life. In Surah Al-Isra, verse 82, it is stated that what we send from Quran is healing and mercy for believers. CBT. Studies in cognitive behavioral therapy have found that listening and understanding of Surah Al-Rahman can help reduce depression. Some more CBT studies of cognitive behavioral therapy also found that reciting and listening to Quran can help reduce depression, anxiety, and stress. Now, let me go further back, 2,000 to 5,000 years ago. While the word depression isn't explicitly used in Torah and Bible, it is understood through descriptions of deep sadness, despair, discouragement, and a sense of heaviness, often experienced by various biblical figures like Job, David, Elijah, and Jeremiah, who expressed feeling of overwhelming sorrow and hopefulness from hopelessness in their stories. Essentially reflecting what we would consider depression in our lives today is in our psychiatric practice present is coming from the scriptures, folks, according to my studies. Today's topic of the day in my show is mood disorders in the elderly, prevalence, functional impact, and management. Challenges of 60 million Americans in the USA alone, folks. In an age where obtaining information is as simple as typing a few letters in the search bar and pressing enter, it is disconcerting to witness the extent of disillusionment. When one realizes we are so uneducated in matters of great importance, mental illness is one of those things, folks. We may live in the 21st century. We may live in a world where automobiles can drive themselves, yet as far as mental illnesses go, we may be very well back, at least in 17th century, if not further back. Unaware about the mental illnesses in our society is so very pervasive that those who are informed of it are in fact a minority, a very small and voiceless minority. I may say, despite the lower prevalence of severe mood disorder in the elderly as compared to younger adults, late life depressions and bipolar disorder are most strongly associated with negative outcomes related to the presence of medical comorbidities, cognitive deficits, and increased suicide risk and overall mortality. The mechanisms that contribute to these associations are probably multifactorial, involving pathological factors related directly and indirectly to the disease itself, ranging from biological to psychosocial factors. Most of the accumulated knowledge on the nature of these associations derives from naturalistic and observational studies, and control data are still scarce. Nonetheless, there has clearly been a recent growth of scientific interest on the late-life bipolar disorder and geriatric depression. In the present study, we review the most relevant studies on prevalence, clinical presentation, and cognitive functional impact of mood disorder in the elderly population of 60 million Americans, that is 20% of American population, folks. By the way, the number of people aged 65 and above has increased 34% since 2012. Several clinical epidemiological studies were dedicated to the study of prevalence of mood disorders in old age in distinct settings. However, fewer studies investigated by underlying neurobiological finding and treatment specialties in late-life depression and bipolar disorder. In the present study, we further discuss the implication of these findings on the management of mood disorders in our older folks. The meta-analysis study by Zenibi and others found the prevalence of depression in the elderly to be 31.74%. That is, every third person in old age is depressed, which is a very large population, folks. Mood disorders are frequent in old age and the prevalence is increasing with population aging. Because of its severe consequences, late life mood disorders may be regarded as an important public health problem, in my opinion. Depression and bipolar disorder in the elderly are associated with medical comorbidities and cognitive decline. In addition to increased risk of dementia, suicide risk, overall mortality. There are particularities in the etiology, clinical presentation, and management of mood disorders in older folks. Awareness of these differences and their clinical implications are important for the effective treatment of mood disorders in the elderly. Here I present a review of current research in epidemiology, neurobiology, and treatment of late-life mood disorders in my show. That is concerning one-third of my fellow Americans in this group. Before that, serious issues, I would like to bring some laughs. Remember, laughter can be healing, but sensitivity is the key. So let's tread lightly into the world of wit and whimsy, where mood swings meet punchlines. Jokes that aim to offer a bit of levity while acknowledging the complexity of the condition.
What? Dr. Siddiqui, you diagnosed me bipolar disorder. Bipolar? Me? I prefer the term emotionally action-packed. Bipolar disorder, in my eyes, is a wrong term, Dr. Siddiqui. Because, tell me, why just have one mood when one can have all the moods? I may accept that I've got bipolar disorder, but at least I'm always keeping things interesting, Dr. Siddiqui. Sometimes I'm up like a rocket. Other times I'm sinking like a submarine. My life is just like action-packed movies.
Folks, telling someone who is manic that he or she is manic is like telling a dictator that he's a dick. Neither is going to admit it, and both are willing to torture you when you are a doctor to prove their points. Let me talk on clinical aspect of mood disorders in the young and mostly in the elderly. Dear folks, bipolar disorder is a mental illness that causes shifts in mood, energy, and activity levels. People with bipolar disorder experience both manic and depressive episodes. Being bipolar is like living in a world with unlimited roller coasters. Bipolar disorder, where the highs are high and the lows are so pretty dramatic. Like a weather forecast for this portion of the world, the West in New York. Sunny one moment, stormy the next. Living with bipolar is like hosting a party where every guest is in an emotional mood. Bipolar disorder, where the emotions have more plot twist than a mystery novel or a Hollywood movie. In the mood for everything or absolutely nothing. It's anyone's guess in these folks. Bipolar folks have highs so high they could reach the stars and lows so low that they need a lifeline. Bipolar disorder is a mood roller coaster without safety harness. They are like firecracker one minute and a damn sponge the next. This is a simple way to describe bipolar disorder, which is of high incidence in North Americans and low in folks from South Asian nations. The bipolar disorder has two extreme poles. That's why it's called bipolar, depression and mania. The manic episodes of bipolar disorder, one is feeling very high, elated or irritable, feeling jumpy or wired, racing thoughts, decreased need for sleep, having delusion of self-importance, being highly creative, energetic, and active, being impulsive and making poor choices, having grand unrealistic plans, reckless or risk-taking behavior. Reckless behavior associated with bipolar disorder include spending money, overspending, racking up credit card debt, or giving away large amounts of money. Substance use is another part, drinking, using drugs, or binging on alcohol. Risky sexual activity, having multiple sex partners, engaging in one-night stands, or being inappropriately flirtatious with opposite sex. Self-harming behavior on oneself or others, driving reckless, gambling, placing risky bets, quitting jobs, leaving a job during a manic episode, having a fixed, mistaken, grandiose or persecutory beliefs, having delusions or hallucinations. The other aspect of bipolar disorder are having depressive mood, feeling very down or sad, feeling slowed down or restless, having trouble concentrating or making decisions, having trouble falling asleep, waking up too early, or sleeping too much, insomnia or hypersomnia, feeling excessive guilt or low self-worth, having hopelessness about the future, having thoughts about dying or suicide, fleeting, feeling very tired and low in energy, and other symptoms talking quickly and rapidly, shifting from one idea to the next, being easily distracted. That's what, from jumping from such highs to such lows. Now, let me bring some more humor with the dilemma due to drugs prescribed of bipolar disorder by my colleague psychiatrist, because folks, laughter is the best medicine. Now, here's a question. How many bipolar disorder people does it take to screw in a light bulb? I say 8 in my experience. Watching different behavior when different medications are prescribed by my colleague psychiatrist. One person with bipolar disorder to drop the first light bulb because his or her hands are shaking so badly from the prescribed Depakote. The other, the second, to wait for the social security check to get the money to pay for the light bulb that the first one broke. The third to go to the hardware store to buy another light bulb and forgot what that bipolar disorder person went there for because of lithium prescribed, and then remembers and turn around to go back only to forget the light bulb wattage and have to call the first to ask. The fourth to come out of a depression into a total mania, who was prescribed Celexa. And there in this store, this bipolar disorder person max out credit cards on new fixtures and buying 1,000 light bulbs. The fifth bipolar disorder person take the fourth to the hospital for manic phase. The sixth bipolar disorder person in the suicidality depressed phase, who doesn't believe that there is a point to screwing in a light bulb because all of life is darkness. And the seventh bipolar disorder person to take the sixth in major depression to the hospital. Finally, the eighth bipolar disorder person comes along pre-diagnosis, screws in the light bulb with no problem, and then goes to the psychiatrist and gets screwed up with expensive new psychiatric medication that costs $2,700 per month. That's new on the market, and the insurance to and fro spending time declines to pay for the drug. Got it, folks? The complex job our head shrinkers have to manage these folks in practice. An older adult may present with symptoms of mania, mixed states, by having depression as well. Requires a careful differential diagnostic evaluation to exclude any organic disease and identifying potentially treatable medical conditions. Lab workup should include a comprehensive metabolic panel, complete blood cell count, thyroid function, toxicology screen, and more specialized assessment, as neuroimaging and specialized studies, electroencephalogram and lumbar puncture, as may be indicated by history, physical or neurological. In older adults, depression may be present with more sleep disturbance, fatigue, psychomotor retardation, hopelessness, helplessness about the future that the younger adults with the same condition. Other very common presentation in the elderly with depression are complaints of poor memory and concentration, slower cognitive processing speed, and executive dysfunction, confounding with dementia called pseudo-dementia, because this dementia is not falling into the category of perfect dementia. Neurological comorbidities may be associated with depression in the elderly folks. For example, Parkinson's disease, stroke, which may account for differences in the clinical presentation of the symptoms. Post-stroke depression is frequently associated with severe vegetative symptoms. Depression in Parkinson's disease is usually milder and with less anhedonia than depression in otherwise healthy geriatric patients. The clinical differences between early and late onset bipolar disorder in the elderly are small and most likely attributable to differences in the duration of illness. Older adults with early onset bipolar disorder more frequently present with mixed episodes, whereas late onset bipolar disorders, elders display higher level of premorbid psychological functional deficit, less severe pathology and more cognitive impairment, particularly in psychomotor performance and mental flexibility. Most of these elderly folks respond on questioning, "I'm fine." Let me play Kylie Hume singing.
Woke up with a headache and some neck pain. Cup of coffee, need the caffeine. Oh, I don't know the last time I wasn't tired. Out in the fast lane, the lady asked if I've been having me a nice day. Oh yeah, I said that I'm fine, guess that I'm a liar. Cause yeah, I'm fine. If F is for feeling overwhelmed, then I is for I'm not alright. Yeah, I'm fine. If N is for not being able to sleep E for every night. Yeah, I'm fine. Finally feeling the pressure of keeping my feelings inside. Yeah, I'm fine. Well, maybe I'm not, and I just need to tell someone I'm not alright. Do you wonder how I feel too? Let's somebody in to finally see the real you. Me too. I hide behind a mask, but it's getting pretty see-through. Cause I'm so tired of trying to pretend like I can do it on my own, when in the end I'm sick and tired of feeling alone. I wish there was a way that you could read my mind when I say I'm fine, because yeah, I'm fine. If F is for feeling overwhelmed and high is for I'm not alright, yeah, I'm fine. If N is for not being able to sleep E for every night, yeah, I'm fine. Finally feeling the pressure of keeping my feelings inside, yeah, I'm fine. Well, maybe I'm not, and I just need to tell someone I'm not alright. Maybe I should tell someone I'm not. Tell someone I'm not alright. Cause lately I'm saying I'm fine. I don't know how I'm lying. Yeah, I'm fine. If F is for feeling overwhelmed, then I is for I'm not alright. Yeah, I'm fine. If N is for not being able to sleep E for every night, yeah, I'm fine. Finally feeling the pressure of keeping my feelings inside. Yeah, I'm fine. Well, maybe I'm not, and I just need to tell someone I'm not alright.
Folks, I heard this I'm fine so many times, I thought I should play this song. Allow me now to use neurobiological correlations of geriatric depression and bipolar disorder. Before that, my observation in the practice to bring some more humor to make this matter more lightly and lighter so that we can take things in a proper perspective to understand what's going on here with the people who are saying I'm fine. Cognitive changes and risk of dementia and late-life bipolar disorder is a clinical fact. You know that. People experiencing a mental breakdown are often required to sign in legal papers in order to be admitted to the hospital. Seriously? How can these documents possibly be legally binding due to the patient's cognitive impairment, Dr. Siddiqui? This is a field day in the courts of law for prosecuting attorneys over these documents. And believe you me, such nonsense still exists in our system. Here is some more humor, folks. Two patrons of the club contesting for the chair of president of their club. One candidate is bipolar patient with narcissistic disorder and another candidate a dementia patient. As they walk into the country club, the announcer announces, "Welcome to the first 2025 presidential debate of our clubs." Did you get it, folks? Older elder adults with bipolar display a widespread array of cognitive symptoms, which may be critical during acute phases. But before that, the Alzheimer's disease depression is considered an independent risk factor in the elderly population for mortality due to poor self-care behavior, reduced adherence to medical treatment, and increased risk of heart disease associated with depression. Early identification and treatment of depression in older adults is crucial to potentially mitigate the increased mortality rate. Now, allow me to use the names of brain centers to present you with pathophysiology of the problem using a little bit of technical knowledge. Before I go further, older adults with bipolar disorder display a widespread array of cognitive symptoms, as I said a moment ago, which may be critical during acute phases of abnormal mood states, but may persist in a lesser extent through euthymic, that is, peaceful, tranquil state of mind. Presumably, these cognitive changes reflect the long-lasting charge from multiple disease-related neurobiological mechanisms. The most frequently reported cognitive deficit are related to executive dysfunctions, affecting abstract thinking. Mental set deficit are related to this problem of executive dysfunction, inhibitory control, decision-making ability, and verbal fluency. In addition to impairments in sustained attention, psychomotor abilities, and verbal memory, these changes invariably exert a negative impact on functionality and psychosocial performance. Impairment of occupational activity may be seen in 30 to 60% of older bipolar disease patients. Another clinical scenario I witness in that the depression in elderly are met with challenging situations and are based on incident that frequently occurs when the patient voluntarily presents seeking help from the doctor. The irony of these depression patients in many ER and the emergency room provider discharges them stating that you are not seriously ill because you look okay, no open wounds or any other signs of physical illness, and they can walk and talk. That's what his belief is. And that the ER folks thinks nothing is wrong with them since all lab results and are normal. I try to question these ER physicians. That's what the answer I get. Here I'm made to wonder who is lacking insight, the patient or the ER provider. Conversely, the lack of insight is a common symptom of bipolar mania, prevents a person from recognizing symptoms mentioned to you in my show. Everybody should know, yet nearly everyone gets upset when a provider, you can't agree with them that they appears depressed and something is wrong. Even the emergency room doctor refused to give the medication to the patient on my insistence when the patient needed to come down from a bipolar high, and the ER physician want the psychiatrist to be able to observe the symptom for herself or himself to make such a diagnosis. Yet, this is one of the many examples that they barely scratch the surface of the absurdities that people with bipolar and their loved ones often face, particularly when psychosis enter the clinical picture. Then when a trigger-happy cops are called to help in the situation at home, then the situation get very dicey in my nation, the United States of America, folks. Folks, there is growing evidence of neurobiological correlates of depression in late life, which has received special attention from scientific community, focusing particularly on neuroendocrine dysfunction, neuroimaging, cerebrovascular correlates, neurotrophins, and inflammatory mechanism, in addition to association between major depression and risk of dementia. Here, I mentioned a little bit earlier that I will bring some technicalities. Neuroendocrine dysfunction are due to neuronal connections that is in the brain cell circuits in brain. You have circuit everywhere, your laptop, your television, your radio. It's the same sort of scenario. We have circuits in our brain. Deregulation of hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis circuit function is associated with suicidal behavior and age-associated alteration in hippocampal or hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, which is a predictor of suicide risk. Genotypes associated with increased cortisol secretion, one of the hormones, and variants of angiotensin-converting enzyme gene are risk factors for late-life depression. In 2021, crude suicide rate among men ages 85 and older was 52.4 deaths per 100,000 population. Males have higher rate of completed suicide than the females in this country of ours, United States of America. In other words, suicide rate is nearly 17 times higher in men than that of same age women. White race has 5 to 6 times greater risk than a non-whites to commit suicide in our population.
You're listening to Conversations on Healthcare with Dr. Majid Siddiqui from Elmwood Immediate Care, 2949 Elmwood Avenue in Kenmore. Call 716-800-3040. Hometown WLVL 1340 AM.
For all your healthcare needs, trust Elmwood Immediate Care and Family Physicians. With 37 years of experience, Dr. Majid Siddiqui cares for patients of all ages, from pediatrics to geriatrics. You'll be seen by medical doctors with on-site state-of-the-art machinery for emergency or routine care. Located at 2949 Elmwood across from Kenmore Mercy, walk-ins are welcome, most insurance accepted. Payment options are available. Call 716-800-3040 for Elmwood Immediate Care and Family Physicians.
Let's get back to Conversations on Healthcare with Dr. Majid Siddiqui from Elmwood Immediate Care in Kenmore. Once again, Dr. Siddiqui.
Now, allow me to explain the anatomy and physiology of brain center's involvement in this disorder with simple terms as much as I can try. Let me start with the investigation of the brain with neuroimaging. Structural and functional neuroimaging, folks. Studies in geriatric major depression indicate a significant volume loss of the brain due to metabolic changes in the frontal, cortical, subcortical pathway circuit, that is the connection upper surface of with the lower surface of the brain. A meta-analysis demonstrated the association of late-life depression with the reduction of hippocampal, that is, deeper zone of the brain volume, and with a large amount of atrophy in the precuneus superior frontal gyrus and ventromedial frontal cortex. Disordered connection affecting brain networks such as default mode network, affective network, salience network and cognitive control network have all been suggested in geriatric depression. Hyperactivity of the default mode network and disorganization of affective network and other cortical limbic connections were recently documented, and such abnormalities were rescued back to normal standards upon successful antidepressant treatment. Folks, please do get treated for depression. This will definitely help in those circuits to remain intact. Now, what could be the causes for cerebrovascular disease? The perforating arteries deliver the blood supply to certain cluster of neurons deep in the brain called basal ganglia, a subcortical hub that is highly connected to prefrontal structure, the front part of your brain, under your forehead. When these vessels are damaged, connections from deeper part, that is basal ganglia, to prefrontal region and other frontal structures are impaired, resulting in increased risk of depression and cognitive impairment, namely executive dysfunction, slowed mental processing speed, and diminished ability of insight, that is brain's capacity to understand any issues before that person. They are not able to understand the issues. According to the vascular depression hypothesis, white matter lesions disrupting axonal tracts in the orbital and dorsolateral prefrontal region as well as in limbic cortical subcortical circuit pathways have been associated with late onset major depression. These pathways are critically involved in emotional regulation and decision-making strategy. They are crying inappropriately or laughing inappropriately. Cerebrovascular disease has been considered as a central risk factor for the development of vascular depression. Conversely, executive impairment was associated with increased risk of vascular dementia. This clinical picture has been designated as a depression executive dysfunction syndrome, characterized by psychomotor retardation, lack of interest, apathy, lack of initiative, impaired processing speed, more motivational problems, depressive ideation, limited insight, prominent difficulty perform daily instrumental activities such as toilet behavior, personal hygiene, regular shower, change of clothes. That's why they appear all disheveled. Therefore, disordered frontolimbic and frontostriatal neuronal circuit connections may account for many of the clinical manifestations of vascular depression that result in reduced neurotrophic support given the potential correlates of neurotrophin. What is neurotrophin? These are small protein molecules that control the growth, survival, and death of neurons, the brain cells. These changes with neuropsychiatric disorder, a recent study aim to determine the peripheral concentration of nerve growth factor in patients with late onset depression. in comparison to age and sex match healthy control patients with late onset depression, both when acutely depressed and also after remission through pharmacological treatment, had evidence of abnormal regulation of psychotropic factors implicated in neuronal survival, folks. Reduced serum brain derived neurotrophic factors levels may contribute to pathophysiology of late life depression that should be treated with antidepressants. I assure you, folks, that the antidepressant works. What are the role of inflammatory mechanism in the brain? Asked a very confident medical student during my rounds. Therefore, let me talk on this mechanism now. An extensive review indicated that upregulation of pro-inflammatory cytokines. What are cytokines, folks? These are small molecules of proteins in the depressed patient that interfere with neurotransmission, particularly in certain limbic structures deep inside the brain called amygdala, hippocampus and nucleus accumbens, with unfavorable impacts on emotional regulation. According to a meta-analysis revealed compensatory inflammatory response with higher concentration of tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin beta 6 in patients with major depression. So we know the pathophysiology. We have advanced. I have brought you from old age to present age, and we have a lot of improvement in management of depression, bipolar disorder. Dr. Siddiqui, why these folks have cognitive impairment? Asked another student of mine. Cognitive symptoms are irrefutably present in geriatric depression, yet studies have not reached a consensus regarding the pattern of neurophysiological impairment in this patient or whether the observed deficits during an acute depression episode will remain. And for how long after symptom remission? Nonetheless, cognitive impairment has been consistently documented in patients with acute depressive symptom as well as among those with long-lasting depressive disorder. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorder, the Bible of Psychiatry, DSM-5, lists the following criteria for major depressive disorder. Depressed mood, feeling sad, feeling empty, feeling hopeless, helpless most of the day, nearly every day, loss of interest, having little or no interest in the activities that were previously enjoyable, weight change, losing or gaining weight without dieting or having a change in appetite, sleep issues, having insomnia or sleeping too much, psychomotor changes, being agitated or slowed down or having observable changes in body movements, fatigue, feeling tired and having low energy, guilt or worthlessness, feeling worthless or having excessive or inappropriate guilt, concentration issues, having trouble thinking, concentrating or making decisions, suicidal thoughts, having thoughts of death, suicide or even attempted suicide. Now let me play a song. It's called Adam's Song.
Was never plugged in at all. I took my time, I heard give all my things to all my friends. You'll never step foot in my room again. You'll close it off, board it up. Remember the time that I spilled the cup of apple juice in the hall. Please tell Mom this is not her fault.
Medical students, and I love that because I learn a lot teaching the medical students.
Dr. Siddiqui, what are the cognitive changes in depression and the risk of dementia?
Asked by one of my medical students. Cumulative evidence supports that major depression increases the risk of dementia, including Alzheimer's dementia, particularly when the affective symptoms are accompanied by consistent subjective memory complaints or by actual cognitive impairment. Although subjective memory complaints were associated with depression in people without dementia, approaches to evaluation of these complaints are very general and still devoid of precise assessment strategies. Nonetheless, patients with concomitant major depression and mild cognitive impairment may have impaired performance on instrumental activities of daily living, which are associated with deficit in executive functions, verbal fluency, episodic memory, sustained attention, working memory, and processing speed. Chronic depression during life courses increases the risk of dementia. And when the disease begins in late life, depression may reflect a prodromal stage of dementia, including Alzheimer's disease. Next frequently asked question during my lecture to medical students is in correlation of depression and Alzheimer's disease biomarkers. Molecular imaging studies with positron emission tomography, in short PET scan, indicating increased amyloid beta amyloid deposition in the brain of depressed elders, reinforced the association between major depression and the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Cognitive impairment and dementia are frequent long-term outcomes of bipolar disorder and therefore particularly affects patients at older age. Lifetime use of antipsychotics, antidepressants, anticonvulsants, and particularly lithium. Lithium is associated with neuroprotective properties in the recent literature. May change not only the psychopathology but also biological markers of the disease. The course of cognitive changes in bipolar disorder that frequently leads to impairment in the middle age and ultimately to dementia in late life is clearly different from that observed in the primary neurodegenerative dementia, namely Alzheimer's disease, which is another indication of distinct etiology. Structural and functional neuroimaging, coming to this, a functional neuroimaging structure based on F-fluorodeoxyglucose uptake, fluorodeoxyglucose positron emission tomography provided evidence of deregulation of corticolimbic glucose metabolism in bipolar disorder, which was characterized by hyperactivation of prefrontal cortex, the front part of the brain right under your forehead, and hyperactivation of anterior limbic regions in a distinct pattern compared to that observed in patients with schizophrenia. The medications that are available now coming from the prehistoric or historic times, I have start my program with, is getting amazingly fast and very usable, folks.
You're listening to Conversations on Healthcare with Dr. Majid Siddiqui from Elmwood Immediate Care, 2949 Elmwood Avenue in Kenmore. Call 716-800-3040. Hometown WLVL, 1340 AM.
For all your healthcare needs, trust Elmwood Immediate Care and Family Physicians. With 37 years of experience, Dr. Majid Siddiqui cares for patients of all ages, from pediatrics to geriatrics. You'll be seen by medical doctors with on-site state-of-the-art machinery for emergency or routine care. Located at 2949 Elmwood across from Kenmore Mercy, walk-ins are welcome, most insurance accepted. Payment options are available. Call 716-800-3040 for Elmwood Immediate Care and Family Physicians.
Let's get back to Conversations on Healthcare with Dr. Majid Siddiqui from Elmwood Immediate Care in Kenmore. Once again, Dr. Siddiqui.
Now let me talk on lithium and neuroprotection. There is convergent evidence on the clinical benefits of lithium treatment in bipolar disorder and mood disorders. However, more recently, cumulative data from experimental models and a few clinical exploration further supported the notion that lithium therapy may also upregulate the neurotrophic and neuroprotective cascades. Individuals chronically exposed to lithium as the main treatment for bipolar disorder also presented with increased cortical thickness and volume of the brain. So from atrophy, it's gaining the volume, folks, especially in medial occipital, in the medial occipital areas when compared to non-users of lithium. This is the latent knowledge I'm presenting to you. So general guidelines for the treatment of geriatric depressions are largely similar to the ones accepted for the treatment of middle-aged adults. Randomized clinical trials in depressed older adults have demonstrated similar efficacy for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, dual inhibitors, tricyclic antidepressants, and monoamine oxidase inhibitors with moderate to large effect sizes. However, some type of antidepressants are better for conditions associated with old age. Older people usually have more comorbidities and use more medication. Because of that, antidepressants with a better pharmacokinetic profile that is less prone to induce drug-drug interaction should be considered as first choice. Sertraline, citalopram, escitalopram, and desvenlafaxin. Moreover, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are not associated with anticholinergic and sedative effect, which is advantages for treatment of elderly patients. Several modalities of psychotherapy demonstrated efficacy for treating depression in old age folks now, including behavioral therapy. As I was talking on religion, it's a behavioral therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, cognitive bibliotherapy, problem-solving therapy, brief psychomotor therapy, and a life review therapy. Electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, is used more often in older adults than in the other age groups, yielding improvement in greater than 80% of patients. Most trials, however, certain adverse events such as cardiac complications need to be ruled out. There's amount of memory loss and delirium. Demand caution in the use of electroconvulsive therapy. The treatment depression in older adults, cognitive effects are transient in most but not all cases. Let me play a song now, sung by Carpenters, that depicts the mood change in depression with a beautiful rhythm.
Talking to myself and feeling old. Sometimes I'd like to quit. Nothing ever seems to fit. Hanging around, nothing to do but frown. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down. What I've got they used to call the blues. Nothing is really wrong. Feeling like I don't belong. Walking around some kind of lonely clown. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down. Funny, but it seems I always wind up here with you. Nice to know somebody loves me. But it seems that it's the only thing to do. Run and find the one who loves me. What I feel has come and gone before. No need to talk it out. We know what it's all about. It seems that it's the only thing to do. Run and find the one who loves me. What I feel has come and gone before. No need to talk it out. We know what it's all about.
Lyrics, folks. Let me now talk about the relatively newer medication. Several uncontrolled studies have shown a decrease in depressive symptoms with use of aripiprazole and acetaminophen for old age bipolar disorder. However, older adults are very sensitive to drug-related effects such as extrapyramidal system symptoms when they get the shakes, so-called tardive dyskinesia. Keep seeing on the television, mouth or lip smacking movements or shakes in the limbs. Acute mania, hypomania and mixed episodes, lithium salt are largely the preferred choice even to this day due to latest information of acute mania in old age bipolar disorder. Lithium may reduce suicide risk and also the risk of dementia. Several open label studies have demonstrated efficacy of lithium in the treatment of acute mania. Valproate has also been suggested to be effective in old age bipolar disorder for treatment of mania. In retrospective report, the efficacy of lithium compared to valproate for the treatment is about the same, which is 82 to 75% respectively. Some studies demonstrated a possible role for the use of antipsychotics in this group of patients. An exploratory analysis of a mixed-age test group treated with olanzapine indicated good response to in patients older than 50 years. A randomized placebo-controlled trial of a mixed-age bipolar disorder sample reported efficacy of quantamine in the sample patient age 59 years or older. The other treatments, repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation, a technique in which rapidly changing magnetic fields are used to induce electrical currents in the brain. I told you the brain circuits are in a mess. Therefore, this magnetic force is used. Promising intervention for depression with treatment effect size as large as the effect size seems to be using antidepressant medications for depression. Physical exercise may also yield benefits as a complementary treatment for depression in older adult folks. One control study proposed that the exercise training may be as effective as antidepressant and better than placebo. Benefit may also apply to refractory depression with further evidence of reducing relapse rate over as long as 5 years for those who continued exercising. Folks, good health ensures independence, security, and productivity. It's natural to worry about the challenges aging can bring. But if you can maintain a healthy lifestyle, surround yourself with people you love, and do things that bring you joy, you can enjoy a fulfilling life well into your sunset years. Here are some tips to help you age gracefully from the inside out. Your skin, your body, largest organ, you treat it with care. It can better protect your body from elements, regulate body temperature and sunscreen. Get yearly skin cancer screening. Follow an anti-aging skin care routine and stay hydrated. Regular exercise lower your risk of disease such as heart disease and cancer and helps you to retain your mobility. Exercise also lowers stress and improves sleep, skin and bone health and mood. It is recommended to incorporate 2.5 to 5 hours per week of moderate intensity exercises, folks. Older adults should also focus on activities that include balance training and muscle strengthening. Healthy foods are key when it comes to aging gracefully. Fresh fruit and vegetable lean proteins such as fish and beans, whole grains, low-fat dairy and healthy fats along with low sodium intake, I recommend. Happiness is a choice. And keeping your mood elevated will keep your stress level down, folks. This is my strong recommendation to you. That's all for this show, folks. Next week, I'm off to Australia, the land down under, a very vast, diverse country known for its unique landscape between Pacific and the Indian Oceans. I'm back with another blockbuster on third Monday of April, that's 21st of April. Thanks for listening to me.
You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare with Dr. Majid Siddiqui from Elmwood Immediate Care, 2949 Elmwood Avenue in Kenmore. Call 716-800-3040. Hometown WLVL 1340 AM.